building strong teams. It's about decentralizing authorities and responsibilities. It's about getting the very best out of this team. It's about growing this team, empowering this team. And as you can see, we were recently selected in one of the best companies to work for in the state of New York, 2010. We're actually number 18 out of 40. But when you look at the list, we're the only manufacturing company, which I think speaks volumes. Speaks for who we are. But it's a great team. We're about 203 teammates right now in 5 different locations: Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, and Albany. Growing, expanding through the recession, making money. And we did it without a layoff. We did it by paying attention to the principles of business and efficiencies and doing things right. And we'll talk about that. So here's something that I think is pretty important. I memorized this in July of 1970 as a plebe at West Point. And in those days, I think it's still true today, plebes had to memorize a lot of stuff, and none of it made much sense to me in those days. I was 17 years old. All I knew is I had to regurgitate this stuff verbatim perfectly, or my life was over. And it didn't mean much in those days. But as time went on, and I experienced my career in the Army as a lieutenant and a captain and a major and lieutenant colonel and a colonel and a brigadier general and a major general, this really came into focus. People think of the Army as a very traditional organization. That's probably your image, where somebody sits on top of the organization and pontificates and makes all the decisions and tells everybody what to do. It's a very command and control environment in a very bad sense. That's not true. That was not true in the organizations I was in, and it certainly wasn't true in the organizations I commanded. It was more of a team member-centric organization where you wanted candor and input and debate and dialogue. Certainly at a point in time, a decision is made, and then the expectation is that everybody gets in line and does what was decided. But it gets back to this. It's about how you treat your people. They're all important. They're all valued. And I highlighted a couple of sentences here that really does say it all. I mean, just take a moment to read that. Can you see it in the back of the room?
No.
All good. The one mode or the other of dealing with subordinates springs from the corresponding spirit in the breast of the commander, substitute, supervisor. Doesn't matter, civilian, military, same thing. He or she who feels the respect which is due to others cannot fail to inspire in their regard for himself or herself, while he or she who feels intense manifest disrespect toward others, especially his juniors, cannot fail to inspire hatred against himself. And I can think of lots of experiences in my life working for people where folks didn't get this. They didn't understand it. And this is the fundamental principle. I don't think you can be an effective leader if you don't understand it. You certainly get results in the short run, but you're not going to lead an organization that's high-performing in the long run. Simple as that. So this is an important concept, this idea that we want to build a team member-centric organization, not a traditional organization. We're not interested in that at Klein Steel. We're not interested in me at Klein Steel making all the decisions and being very directive and authoritarian and saying, you will do this, we'll get it done. Because what happens when you do that is everybody freezes. Everybody in the organization loses their initiative. They stop doing things. They're having no fun. They don't like coming to work. They're looking for other jobs. They're going to wait until you tell them to do something because they don't want their head to go off. And you all have probably been in organizations like that. I know I have. And it was no fun, and I couldn't wait to get out. In the Army, the good news was every 1 or 2 years you would move, so you just had to wait the guy out. But you learn from that, and you understand that what you really want to build is a team member-centric organization. One where everybody's valued, everybody has input, ideas that are generated from the bottom are oftentimes the best. This idea that nobody in this room has all the answers. I know I certainly don't. But when you put the entire team together and generate discussion and debate, boy, there's nothing you can't accomplish. So this is what we're working to do at Klein Steel in a nutshell. We've been working this now for 5 years. We want this idea where team members are often called the shots. You know, I as a leader shouldn't have to order anybody to do anything. I just ask. You know, we want to enable people to set their own objectives. We do that in the assessment process. We want to solicit feedback and self-assessments. We do that in the assessment process. You know, we want to create, and we have created, a self-administering award system. I'll talk about that later. It's all about building this very special climate where leaders are servants, servant leadership. Mm-hmm. Not well understood, often not practiced in most organizations, either in the military or in business. Any questions about this at all? Does it make sense? There's a big difference between a traditional organization, they're all over the place, and a team member-centric organization. That's a special place to work. That's where folks get out of bed in the morning, can't wait to get to the work site, because they know they're going to contribute. People stay with an organization for a whole bunch of reasons. The last one on the list is pay and compensation. The first one on the list is leadership, values. The second one on the list is that people have the sense that they're contributing to their organization's success. And that's all about this. That's all about team member-centric models.
I'm very interested in your concept of servant leadership.
Yeah.
That is something we don't talk about very much, but it's key to...
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is. And, you know, I didn't start out this way. Trust me. When I was a young lieutenant commanding a platoon of 32 soldiers right after Vietnam in 1974, the Army in those days was essentially broken. I didn't have any subordinates. I had to do it all myself. So my initial 5 or 10 years, I was very authoritarian, very directive. I had to do it all. Holy smokes. And you can do that in a small organization, but as you grow in the Army in this case, and suddenly you're commanding a company of 200 infantry soldiers, and you've got a greater span of control, certainly by the time you're commanding a battalion of 800 soldiers and 6 companies and even larger span of control, it starts to dawn on you that you better figure out a way to decentralize and empower your subordinates to build a team member-centered model. And along the way, you figure out that leadership is all about service. It's taking care of your people. You know, it's an affair of the heart is what it is.
So, what is the biggest challenge in creating that kind of environment? Be expecting the traditional.
Right. You know, when I got here, you have to ask some of the guys that were here. When I got here, that was probably the fear, you know, that was there naturally. My God, this guy's a retired major general who comes out of the Army, the command and control in a very bad sense. Holy, you know, this is not good. Okay, but folks don't understand. Don't understand at all, and there's a lot of potential for our nation to harvest senior military guys and get them away from the defense industry into places like Rochester and small businesses to exercise and practice some of this stuff. I haven't answered your question yet, but again, this is not something that you learn overnight. It's not something you're born knowing. You have to learn it, and in the Army. There's a terrific institutional training base, which we don't have in small business or medium business. In the Army, I went to school for entire years at a time as a lieutenant, as a captain, as a major, as a lieutenant colonel. Entire years at a time where you're studying tactics and operational art and so forth, but you also spend a lot of time studying leadership and reading all the books and discussing it and debating it in a classroom like this. And then you go out for 3 or 4 years in this wonderful leadership laboratory and you get to practice this stuff. And you see what happens. And you develop your own techniques.
Right.
And as that, for me, as that matured, the technique, you know, what I ended up being is a very team member-centric kind of guy that believes in decentralization. It doesn't scare me a bit. Believes in empowerment and believes in bringing the best out of the folks that work for me. I'd rather have them ask forgiveness than permission. People oftentimes ask me questions expecting to get an authoritarian answer, and I've learned over time to fire back a question, I don't know, what do you think? I think I know the answer, but I want you to tell me the answer. I want you to get to the point where you're doing it without being told. Yeah. Now, your question. It was a good one, I know. I'm just trying to...
especially in an industrial environment.
Yeah.
What's the biggest challenge in creating this kind of team-centric environment for people who maybe like to do that?
Here's the biggest challenge. In order to have this, you have to have discipline. Let me explain that. In the Army, as the commander of the 1st Infantry Division, with 22,000 troops were going into Iraq, tough year, we would have these very detailed decision briefs with wonderful courses of action discussed and debated, but at some point I would make a decision, and we would all go execute that decision, and I had about a 99.9% probability that folks would do what they were told to do. In business, you don't have that. You know, it may be a 50% hit rate. And I didn't realize that they climbed steel first day. So, you know, shame on me. I should have figured it out a lot quicker. What really happened was I thought I decided what we were going to do, and everybody took off to another meeting without me to figure out what they were really going to do. So it's the discipline. It's setting the azimuth, which I'll talk in a minute. If everybody understands the mission, the vision, the values, and where you're going, that's step one, and then building in the discipline into the organization. And boy, you get that right. And it takes time, it takes effort, it takes persistence. You can't do it in 2 or 3 years. You just have to have a long view and know that you're going to get there. Yes?
Isn't part of this kind of setting your boundaries of control? In other words, if you've got teams that you're going to trust to go off and really kind of execute what they're asked to do.
Yeah.
They have to crisply understand what their boundaries are.
Sure. And that starts with...
When you say discipline, that's what I started thinking.
That's a great way of saying it. You know, where you clearly define the mission for an organization, you define the vision in the Army, that's the intent. And frankly, in any organization in the Army, if I did that right, and gave them their box to play in, go have a nice day. Report contact with the enemy and let me know if you need any help. And you can do the same thing in business. I'm convinced of it. And you can achieve so much. So many opportunities you can seize, you know, because you got people with heads in the game and they understand the mission, they understand the vision. You know, we've got strategic goals, goals that have been cascaded down through the organization. So people all understand where they fit into this thing. Yes?
So basically what you're saying is that there has to be a commonality of purpose with a clear, detailed purpose.
And that's the first principle.
Yeah. And what's happening in business, the purpose changes depending on which functional area you're in. Because each one of them has different metrics and different objectives. So
same thing in the Army. Same thing in the Army. Same thing applies. You got an overarching mission and vision for your company, and then you've got departments, you've got people, you know, organizations subordinate to the company with different missions. So, okay, they've got goals that are all built in support of the company mission. Let me go through these six principles that might help to bring it into focus. Good questions, though. But before I get into that, okay, I think we all understand team member centric. You know, there's a lot of value to it. And this is why. This is the empowering chart in the whole thing. This is the most important concept I'm talking about today. A very simple profit and loss statement. You know, you all seen these. There's two ways that we can achieve profitability. And the Klein Steel team understands this in space. One is through raising sales dollars up on the top end. And those dollars have to go through the calculus of the P&L statement. And in the case of Klein Steel coming out of the recession, 2.3% of those dollars turns into net profit. Everybody gets that. The other way to achieve profitability is through cutting expenses. And those dollars drop to the bottom line 100% dollar for dollar. Boom. Straight down there. And that's huge. When you get everybody on the team who's in a team member-centric organization who understands where you're going, they all understand, who are empowered and expected to take the initiative, boy, you can do a lot here on this end. And this is one of the reasons why we've gotten through this recession as well as we have. And you can plug anything you want into this expense line. Dollar for dollar, it drops straight into profit, for example. Workman's compensation insurance. Klein Steel is part of the captive, insurance captive. It's a wonderful deal. If you're interested, ask me later and I can tell you more about it. The principle is 280 companies are all combined into one captive. The premium that you don't use up in a given year, you get back. And that's the simple part of it. Very selective, 280 companies with strong safety programs. And a commitment to continually get better, you know, and it's a wonderful program. They help us in so many ways, and we help each other. But here's the deal. Klein Steel stands to get back in any given year $300,000 in unused premium. And that drops to the bottom line here in net profit. That $300,000 is pretty exciting. It hits you in about September of each year. What's the offsetting total sales that you have to achieve in the same year to do the same thing?
43 times that.
43 times that. Room full of engineers. It's wonderful. But that's exactly right. $12 million for a small business. That is significant. And people start to understand that. You can put anything in. This could be the cost of quality, as you see. It could be the cost of inventory accuracy. I mean, there's so many efficiencies that the guys on the floor and the folks in the office control. Way out of my control, but they control it. They got it. And you know, you devise a bonus program and everything else to encourage this kind of behavior. This is a huge selling point. I think it's the most empowering concept in a small to medium-sized business. Two ways to get to profitability. Don't forget about cutting expenses, getting more efficient. Reducing your cost to serve. Much work to be done there. Okay, so six principles I want to talk about that hopefully tie together. Setting the azimuth. Azimuth is direction, mission, vision, values, where we're going. If you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. Constantly. Listen. Leaders have to listen. Most don't. Decentralize. I've talked about that a little bit. That idea to trust and empower. Most folks I know don't decentralize because it scares the hell out of them.
Yeah.
They don't want to fail. So they've got themselves in this vicious doom. Organizations don't get better if you don't decentralize. Do the right thing when no one's looking. That's a concept, it's an ethos that most people don't have, in my opinion. You've got to build a team with team members that get that. When in charge, take charge. That's leadership. Supervisor, manager, senior staff, whatever. And then finally, I think as important as the others is we as leaders, we've got to balance the personal and the professional. And I'll talk about that. So interrupt me anytime, please. Setting the azimuth. If you're not careful, your organization will wander and squander resources, waste time and energy. There's only so many hours in the day. And the days and the weeks fly by. So leaders have a responsibility to make sure that you got an unambiguous focus on what's important. And in my life, I found that the only way to know that that's really going on and people understand what the focus is to go down two levels to confirm or deny that that's understood. It's not good enough just to go to your direct reports. You got to go two levels down. And ask questions and probe and make sure that the things are understood. You know, it's about driving out complacency, false urgency. You can get people working real hard doing stuff that doesn't matter to your bottom line. They think they're busy, but it really doesn't matter to their bottom line. And as I'll show you in a minute, this is all about establishing mission, vision, values. You have to repeat yourself often. You know, there's been studies done, and it goes something like this. The average adult needs to hear something 7 times before it sinks in. I believe that's true. And by extension, a below average adult needs to hear it 21 times. So, as a leader, I've always found myself repeating myself over and over and over and over, to the point sometimes where I can't stand hearing myself anymore. But I know I have a responsibility to keep conveying what I'm saying, because there'll be somebody in the group who either is hearing it for the first time or is finally understanding it for the first time. And don't forget, you've got turnover, there's new folks. You know, you can make a big mistake by putting something out once and assuming that that's done. It's not. You've just begun. So this takes a whole lot of hard work to repeat the message and get it out there. And I've already said this. You don't know where you're going, any road will get you. And I've been in lots of organizations that have gone that way. Everybody's real busy, but at the end of the day, there's no focus, and there's no directed energy. You're not going where you need to be going. You're going all over the place. One might argue that's the United States government. So let me take it to Klein Steel. Here's the Klein Steel mission statement. A mission statement from my Army training has 4 elements: the who, the what, the why, and the how. And you want to make a mission statement pretty clear, pretty concise. Folks in the organization need to understand this. At Klein Steel, I think we do. We spend a lot of time on this. The who, Klein Steel, what, strives to be the best provider of metals. Why, customizing solutions to meet our partners' needs. That's a pretty important concept that drives a lot of what we do and who we are. How do we do it? With the best people, with technology, and process improvement. And we fall back on this mission statement, 2 important sentences a lot. This was developed by senior staff in a strategic planning session off-site. It's reviewed constantly every year, refined as we go, but it speaks to us. People understand what that means. You're not going to find a steel service center that's focusing on customizing solutions. They don't exist. There's only one, and I know it's right here. Here's our vision that's at the moment work in progress. I just wanted to show it to you. We're going through the annual strategic planning process right now. But this is our current vision statement as we see it. And it's getting this important point, 3 years, you know, 3-year time frame. We're going to continue to grow stronger by listening to and serving customers the way they need to be served. Ties back to the mission statement, doesn't it? Being best in class with respect to safety, accuracy, quality, on-time delivery, and productivity. And those 5 concepts mean a lot, 5 or 4, 1 or 5, mean a whole lot to Klein Steel teammates. They all know them. They're all graded on them. It's in goals. It's talked about. There's meetings monthly to go into the scores of safety, accuracy, quality, on-time delivery. Productivity is constantly in motion with Kaizen events and things going on here. In building a team member, an enduring team member-centric organization, there it is. That's part of our vision statement. Growing stronger for the success of 3 classes of people: customers, suppliers, and teammates. I've never said employee, have I? You won't hear that. Everybody's valued. We all play an important role here. Strengthening our organization to be leaner and more effective. Boy, we really piled on that here. We now have an activities-based costing model that allows us to bore into the net profit of every customer and every product line. Had it for 3 months. It's unbelievable what it's done to Klein Steel. And we're implementing a distribution strategy now that includes geographic expansion. We just last week transitioned our Syracuse branch into a retail store with a co-located sales office. Because of our focus on eliminating excess and waste, we realized that we had a fleet of trucks and overhead in Syracuse that we didn't need. We can service every customer out of here, from here to Watertown to Utica and Binghamton. So that caused us to rethink our efficiency and our whole model. But it's driven by this vision. Driven by that vision. Here's our values that we instituted about 5 years ago, and there's probably some in the room that would say, John, there's 10 on that list. That's way too many. This is what works for us. We take an annual climate survey with all the team members, and they grade us on this stuff. It's one of the reasons we were one of the best companies to work for in New York State. No question in my mind. The simple fact that we've got 10 values and we walk the talk with these values from the newest team member to myself. And we don't tolerate those that don't. And I mean, as you read them, I think they make sense. That's the kind of organization people want to be a member of. We've had lots of recruits come to us and say, we went to your website and looked at your values. If that's true, I want to be on your team. So these are the values. And again, it's mission, vision, values. And that then, by extension, gets into the strategy and the goals that we establish and how we cascade goals throughout the organization so that we're all focused on the same things. Out of that comes 5 imperatives that we've embraced. Safety, clearly. I've already talked a little bit about that. We're in a captive, and not only do we have a moral obligation to make sure that nobody gets hurt, but there's a financial reward that's enormous to the company. Klein Steel shares profits. Joe Klein is all for that. An amazing guy. And that's a special environment. Accuracy is everything from inventory accuracy to order accuracy to programming accuracy, all the engineering work that goes on around here. Really important. Quality, of course, speaks for itself. You know, the right dimensions, packaged right, marked right, all that stuff. On-time delivery and productivity. And what we all understand is you never sacrifice 1, 2, or 3 to achieve 4. That's a major sin. Don't get anybody hurt. Don't make a mistake in accuracy, and don't make a quality mistake just because you're in a hurry to make an on-time delivery tomorrow. Far better to call the customer and say, we're going to be a day late, and here's why. As opposed to, here it is, figure it out. Questions on any of this? Okay. So the second point I want to talk about is the importance of listening. Leaders have got to listen. And, you know, it's a simple dialogue. It's treating somebody with dignity and respect. You can tell when somebody's not listening to you. Most folks are not good listeners. You have to train yourself to do it. Sometimes you have to force yourself to do it. But whoever you're talking with probably has a great idea. You might be in a counseling session, an assessment. You might be doing an after-action review. You might be doing a 5-step risk assessment, whatever. You owe it to your team member to listen to the point that he or she's making, because it's probably pretty good if you've got to listen. Most folks are not listening. They're thinking about what they're going to say next, and they lose some really important stuff. As I said before, no one has all the answers. Dignity and respect, one of our values. Who else needs to know is one of the things that we at Klein Steel have put up in our heads and on our walls. You got to stop and ask yourself, I've got this nugget of information right here. Who else in the organization would benefit by knowing that so they could then take the initiative to do something else in their lane? And that's important to know. So often in organizations, people want to protect their stovepipe. Maybe it's job security, you know, maybe it's the way they were trained, who knows. Our challenge is to cut those stovepipes all off and get everybody working on the same sheet of music, and part of that is sharing information, listening, being considerate. Okay? The next idea, number three is decentralize and empower. You know, there's trusting and empowerment. And the first bullet up there, I think, is really true. And I've worked with some of these guys that are classic. Senior 4-star generals that were absolutely micromanaging their teams. And it's no fun. There's no initiative. It stifles people. You can't wait to get off of that boat. You work hard to find another job. We've all been there. But that's an insecure person who doesn't want to let go, is afraid of letting go, is afraid of failure. You know, the list goes on and on. Our job as leaders is to set the azimuth and encourage initiative. Allow people to fail. You don't fail after all. How are you going to get better? You know, it's okay to make a mistake. And then we'll get together, we'll do an after-action review, we'll figure out what needs to be done. Maybe we have to change an SOP or a work instruction. Something's got to change. We don't want to repeat the mistake. Don't do that. Let's learn from it and get better. But it's okay to make that mistake once. Delegating responsibilities to the appropriate level, not necessarily to the lowest level, but to the appropriate level. Sometimes you have to put those delegations in writing. The culture of learning, I've already talked about that. Company-wide SOPs are important. And this gets back to a question earlier, discipline is a prerequisite. Your organization, in order to be team member-centric and firing on all cylinders in a decentralized mode, has got to have some rules. And that's the SOPs. Clearly established, well thought out, trained repetitively. Remember, it takes somebody 7 times to hear it. Don't assume they're going to follow it just because you said it's signed and it's in the company folder. No one's looking at that. You got to pull it out and get people to understand and read. Mentoring is required and expected. I had leaders at Klein Steel 5 years ago tell me that I didn't think mentoring and training is part of my responsibility. Whoa. You haven't checked. I mean, that's an inherent responsibility. Empowered teams achieve spectacular results. I've seen it in business. I've seen it in war. I've seen it in peace. It's very true. And just to give you an example of that, empowerment, this is the war plan from, some of you might recognize it, from the first Gulf War. General Schwarzkopf and his headquarters, and my division is right here, the 24th Division, the Victory Division, General Barry McCaffrey. These guys understood empowerment. They understood decentralization. They wanted their brigades, battalions, and companies to take the mission and the intent, well-rehearsed, and go make it happen. An incredible mission, as you recall, didn't last long. I ended up right up there on Highway Plume, right there, when the ceasefire was called. And our tanks and guns were pointed toward Baghdad. You can imagine we were a bit miffed. Because decentralization and empowerization is important, because when you cross the line of departure, this is what happens. Goes up. I mean, the best plan in the world does not extend beyond, does not survive contact with the enemy, does not survive contact with the marketplace, does not survive contact with your competitors. This is what happens. That was my view of the world. And I couldn't even talk to the division commander for hours. He expected us just to do what we had to do. And it works. Decentralization. I mean, there's lots of examples in business. When you decide to open up a new branch or extend into a new product line, you've all been through it, you know what I'm talking about. You do the best plan in the world. At the end of the day, when you pull the trigger, the enemy has a vote. And that competition is the enemy. And things change. And you need empowered teams that can react to a situation and do what has to be done without being told to do it. They got to report to you. They got to let you know what they're doing. But you don't want them to be waiting for you, the leader, to tell them what they're doing. The fourth concept that I wanted to talk about, principle, is do the right thing when no one's looking. In this day and age, it's hard to find team members, hard to find recruits that'll sign up to this. That just means we got to work harder to find them, because they're out there. Wonderful teammates. So the recruiting process is hard. It's continuous. You know, we're interviewing at Klein Steel every single day. We're constantly looking at the talent to find the people that understand us, doing the harder right rather than the easier wrong, the people that listen to their conscience. When I was promoted to Brigadier General back in 1997, a very senior Navy 4-star, pulled me aside and said that. Good job, but the further up the flagpole you get, and he was right, because you're living in a fishbowl. leaders are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether you like it or not. And people are making judgments on your character, on your disposition. They're reading your personality, your attitude. All of it makes a big difference. Don't ever ask your teammates to do something you yourself would not do. This is important. You know, doing the right thing when no one's looking. How many times as a leader have you walked by something that's wrong? Whatever. And not stop to correct it. And the minute you do, you've just accepted a new and lower standard that's really hard to change. And that's a principle that I think we all get. You know, you got to do it. No matter what time of day it is, you're tired, you're exhausted, you got something else to do. Somebody out there is watching. Up, look at that. It's not important to them. Therefore, it can't be important. Cross it off the list. So your whole values chart just went in the trash can. Or whatever. All your safety rules just got canned. So this is something you really got to pay attention to. Integrity, non-negotiable. It's one of our values. You know, tell the truth. Persistence matters. You'll see a chart on the wall down here of this fella climbing the stairs at a stadium, you know, one stair at a time. I love it. That's what it's all about. You don't turn a battleship on a dime. It takes sometimes years, and it takes a whole lot of persistence. You don't give up. You don't back away. So, doing the right thing when no one's looking. A good example of that in my past is Bosnia. December 1995, I was one of the two brigade commanders deployed to Bosnia, two U.S. brigades, to implement the terms of the Dayton Peace Accord. Spent 13 months of my life there. And in this situation, it was so difficult and so hard. I had to trust in my team of 5,000 troops and 7 battalions and however many companies, platoons and squads, to do the right thing when I wasn't looking, with respect to treating the Serbs and the Croats and the Bosniaks with impartiality, with respect to obeying the Uniform Code of Military Justice, with respect to their own personal hygiene in a terribly cold Bosnian winter when we were living in tents, all those kinds of things. But we worked hard for a long time to build that team member-centric organization and folks that bought into this idea that I'm going to do the right thing when no one's looking. That's when it matters. And it was an incredible experience. Here was the first tank of my brigade crossing the Sava River. Remember that fiasco to get the bridge across December 1995? The first bridge got washed out in a flood, and Army engineers were having a good time. But miserable. I mean, the picture captures this. 20 degrees, wet, cold, going into Bosnia. There ain't no hotels. There's nothing. And you're going to pitch your tent. You're going to live like that for the rest of the winter. And at the same time, you're going to implement a very difficult mission. Where in our area, Srebrenica, that area, there was a whole lot of conflict and problem. Do the right thing when no one's looking. The fifth principle is when in charge, take charge. And this has to apply to your leadership team at every single level. This idea that lead, follow, or get out of the way. Take charge. Initiative matters. Ask forgiveness. I'd much rather have a team member come to me and say, John, I tried something and it didn't work, as opposed to, I've been thinking about doing this for a long time and wasn't sure if I should or not. What do you think? Hey, listen, you know the mission, you know the vision, you understand the strategic framework of where company's going. You tell me. If you had taken action weeks ago, it would already been done and you would have been on the objective already. Don't be afraid to fail. Confront the facts. Boy, never shoot the messenger. Yeah. Every report that I can think of that I've gotten the first time is always wrong. Always. There's always, and sometimes it's way wrong. Way wrong. So there's a tactical patience in there that I think is important. Teamwork. Developing a bias for action. That's what you want in your organization. Otherwise it gets stymied. Things don't happen. There's frustration levels building. People want to scream. So that's number five. And the example I had on that is Iraqi Freedom 2, 2004. 1st Infantry Division in green up here. That was my area, the size of West Virginia. 22,000 troops, 27 different forward operating bases, fairly complex mission. When in charge, take charge. Guys like that young corporal on a Bradley fighting vehicle from the 1st Squadron, 4th Cavalry, doing his thing in Othaluy. Really difficult mission. They lost a lot of soldiers, but he's in charge. And that's a relatively low-ranking soldier. He's been in the Army 3 years. But we trust him. And we expect him to take charge. And then finally, this sixth principle. Balance the personal and the professional. In my experience, and I've worked for him, a leader without balance will destroy that organization. People don't have fun. They lose the spark. It's not about working harder and smarter. And it gets into the, you know, some of these previous principles that we've been talking about. Get involved with communities. If you go to the Klein Steel website, there's a whole page on the different initiatives that we support, from the federal level to the state level, county level, community, nonprofits. A whole laundry list. We encourage people to sit on boards and take time to go do that stuff, because it is important. So here are the takeaways that I hope I get on. It's a leadership is a developed skill. It's a journey. You know, you don't wake up in the morning knowing all this stuff. You're certainly not born. You have to learn it. And the challenge is that in small organizations like Klein Steel, a $60 million organization, there is no institutional training model like there was in the Army, where the big Army would send me or sergeants to school for a whole year to learn their skills and the training. We got to do it ourselves. So we've started what we call Klein Steel University, and it's generally resourced from within. We've got some outside consultants helping us with it, but it's now 12 modules for all the leaders, and they have to get through that. They get certified, they get a diploma. And now we've got another track for everybody else. It's called personal leadership, how to maintain a checkbook, you know, wellness, things like that, because we want to invest in our people. The example we set and how we lead directly impacts your organization. It really is serious business. It's not about I and me, it's we and us. And it's gratifying to hear in an organization less and less I and me's and more we and us's. Decentralization, we've hit hard. Persistence matters. An effective leader has got to walk the talk with the values. You're being looked at all the time. You got to lead from the front. You don't ask anybody to do something you yourself wouldn't do. It's about servant leadership. It's about building and empowering strong teams. It's this persistence to continually grow and improve, setting the conditions for that. And then finally, I would just close by saying, boy, follow your instincts. Any time that I haven't in my life, I regret it. I regret it. So I'm going to stop there and ask you if you have any questions. Please.
I wanted to ask you, you have a lot of ideas from all the people on the team.
Yeah.
Do you do anything particular to support innovation at Klein Steel? To draw it out of people?
What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
This is Todd Zyra and he's operations.
Oh, we do a lot of things. You'll actually, when you head out there, I mean, you know, John talked about our values, and you know, we have the values in action program that we have. That it's team member driven. It's recognizing people for that. And you'll see it when we get out the plan. You'll see it right up on the wall. But you know, every month when John does his communication meetings with every team member, people that get recognized for those types of things, they get a certificate. They go up. They get, you know, shake his hand in front of everyone. Public recognition. They get a certain number of those. They'll get gift cards and things like that, monetary, you know, rewards for a certain number to reward those things, because people do what gets rewarded. So the more you can recognize it, the better off it'll be.
You know, this aspect of candor is important, and people understand that they should contribute, and they do. We have wonderful discussions in this room as we work through some very difficult issues with our cost to serve, with our different models for providing steel to our customers. great ideas come from the very lowest levels. Does that answer that? What else we got? Sir?
You mentioned Kaizen events.
Yeah.
And a lot of these principles appear to have parallels to like a Toyota Lean.
Yeah.
Have you pursued any formal Lean or Six
Sigma? We have actually partnered with Sims from RIT, and this goes back now a couple of years, but they've been over here and they certified our leaders, and we've got an entire effort focused on process improvements, both internal and external, with customers. And I think it's great.
What was the biggest change in this career part two? What was the thing that surprised you most about the environment?
What surprised me most? Yeah. 1st Infantry Division, Big Red One, 22,000 soldiers, incredible, complex environment, a huge staff, multiple levels of redundancy within the staff, all the things you wish you had at Klein Steel. The challenges we face here are every bit as complex and difficult. And you have to figure out a way to do it without that large staff. Because it, in a small company, as you all know, it's usually the same people in the room when they call the meeting. Well, shall we, sir?
When I talk to companies about innovation, each company has a different perspective on what innovation is for them. What is it for Klein Steel?
For Klein Steel, let me take a shot. You guys chime in if you want. Innovation for us is this persistence to stay on course with process improvement. Internally in our own organization and externally with customers. We've got some great examples of that. But it is a commitment to do that. It's a whole mindset. It requires the right people, the right skills, and we're constantly focused on getting better, being more efficient, reducing our cost to serve.
But would you describe where you put your quality dollars?
Quality dollars.
Money you spend on quality, where does it go in your organization?
Jim, I'll start and you can pick up from there. Jim Sloan is our manager of quality and engineering. Okay? He can definitely. We focus a lot on quality. We've established for ourselves a goal of 500 defects parts per minute, which is spot safe. We're close to that right now. You know, we want to get better than that. And we pour into every single mistake that we make and figure out the root cause and go after it with vengeance to figure out what went wrong, why it went wrong, and what we can do in the future to fix it. And we've invested there's a lot of time invested in that with those, a whole lot of time, changing SOPs and focused on quality. And then we bought a lot of equipment too, CMM machines and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's something, you know, when you talk about Klein Steel and getting a processing on your tour, you know, Klein Steel was a distribution house, pretty much just buying and selling structural steel. All of a sudden, here comes a laser and a water jet holding 5 and 10 thousandths, and we're out there. This is really happening. We're holding tape measures trying to, where are we at here? You know, we think we're all right. And it's like, time out. This is a whole other structure for a quality organization. So we had to go back. Now all of a sudden, you start talking about a quality lab, quality technicians, documentation process, SOPs are just out there. So you invested in people, equipment, technology training is a big one for us. And we meet monthly with it.
CKS.
So we developed our own quality program. The steel industry is kind of all over the place. So we have what they call certified Klein Steel. We wanted to have some standards set with our company that we can both go out and sell with and our employees can live with based on the equipment requirements. So we developed our own, you know, you heard certified Angus Beef. We really kind of stole that from them. Once the skin's off, the meat's the meat, the way you, the cross-section looks with the beef. So we did the same thing with steel, which we think was really a good idea for the steel service centers. And a lot of them model after us at this point.
You mentioned CMM machines.
We have a CMM machine, yeah.
Laboratory. Would you say the majority of your quality dollars are going into reactive costs of quality or proactive?
We're trying to spread that out, but we really want to be proactive, obviously. You want to be ahead of that curve. You want to be investing in these equipment. I mean, before we were definitely proactive, right, because we didn't have a CMN. So there goes those parts, and now we're sending someone else to inspect them for us. We definitely need to be in the proactive end of that.
It's probably, I'd say it's 70-30.
Yeah.
Proactive.
I put it, 70% proactive. And just to tie in a little bit, you know, we do have a couple major customers that we interact. We really drive the CPI with those customers. And these are some big customers. And we're a pretty small steel service center. And all of a sudden, I find ourselves, we're in the middle of this, and we find ourselves pushing them, trying to get those folks to realize cost savings and quality improvements along with those. I mean, there was one customer of ours that I went over, and the quality on the floor was totally different than their quality engineer. Totally different, a huge disconnect, and also we're showing them you have disconnects within your own process. So kind of to piggyback on that answer over there was we found that these CPIs that we do with our customers, not just internally here.
What's a CPI?
Continuous process improvements.
Oh, okay.
Good question.
Any other questions? Yeah.
Suggestion boxes for employees, or how do individuals submit thoughts and ideas? It's clear your culture is there, but...
Good question. We don't need suggestion boxes. We're well beyond that. That's the short answer. You know, departments and activities doing after-action reviews, to get it out there, can we reward candidates?
That's the synergy, John. He's so humble there. That's the synergy he brings. You know, I'm a 23-year employee, so to me, here comes the general guys. Get ready, you know, get your resumes ready. Everyone's all nervous, you know, and you know, when you're jet, right? You're getting run by an entrepreneur, Joe Klein, great guy, right? But we're looking for what was the number one thing? Leadership. And so for a lot of us folks, once you get over that initial, oh no, here we go, you realize, I need a leader. I need someone that helps us. He takes that leadership and turns it in. I call it a synergy for me. So now you have the synergy. Actually, the suggestion box went away. We didn't need it. We have open door policy. You can go to John, we have anyone need to go to at a supervisor level.
I figured such. That's why I just wanted to touch it. One of the books that I always love is The Speed of Trust. And clearly this organization has trust. Is it part of its culture?
Absolutely.
Yes. Along the lines of that, how fast does somebody get recognized, and how fast does something get implemented? Maybe it's a marketing idea.
It can happen real fast. If it's something significant, I'll grab, or Todd will grab, or Jim, a gift card and go right down there and say, gather around.
Okay.
Or if it's the values in action, it's no more than 4 weeks later.
Okay. You know? I like that. Thanks.
You got to talk to your people a lot. You got to hear it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And most folks shy away from that.
Yeah. Most companies.
Yes.
You mentioned you're going for Five Sigma level quality.
Yeah.
Why not just go for Six Sigma, which is the recognized level? They're both stretch goals when you start.
Yeah, they're stretch goals, and our choice was let's take it one objective at a time. We had to, Jim will tell you, pretty much redo our whole quality program.
I mean, that was only a year and a half ago. We really restructured the whole quality organization. There was no lab. It was one guy out there trying to be a technician, and he needed support, and we needed to have that organization set up and formed. And so it is in its infancy stage. We think Five is good enough for right now. We need to get to Six. Absolutely.
Okay, well, let me ask Brad to come up then and just give a very short...
I'll just give you guys one...
very short brief on warehouse safety, because we're about ready to go.
Yeah, one quick minute here. Just because it is dark outside, it is, pushing 7 o'clock at night, they're working out there. We do run a full second shift. All the processing equipment is going to be going. The cranes are moving. The fork trucks are going. There's trucks coming in and out of this building. It's actually starting to get to the really busy time of the day when we start loading our trucks. Hopefully it looks like that when we actually get out there. Keep your eyes open where you're walking. You see, I'll go through the hazard over here on the left-hand side. There is going to be stuff on the floor. Hopefully there isn't too much water. There isn't too much things going on, but be mindful of where you're walking. Struck by overhead material, not a huge concern, but just keep your eyes open. Like I said, there's cranes, there's material. It's going to be flying overhead. Nothing in this building is light. Everything's going to be heavy. It is a cause for concern. Same thing with trucks and forklifts. Like I said, they'll be around. Everything's making noises. There's horns blowing. There's buzzers going. And we'll keep you guys safe. We'll keep you where you can't go and where you shouldn't be. Careful what you touch. I don't shy away from it. Nothing out there's going to be too awful bad. I can't give a tour without getting my hands filthy because I tend to touch everything. Just be mindful. Pay attention to what you're doing. The guys that you're walking with, they'll show you what you can and can't touch, look at, see all that stuff. Retina damage, please don't look at the plasma flame. It is pretty much identical to arc welding. Don't stare at that for too awful long. You will hurt yourself. Lasers are not such an issue. Thankfully, the machines are designed so that you can stare at what that thing's doing and you won't be potentially hurting yourself. In terms of airborne material from grinding, the guys that are running those grinders out there, you know what's happening. Dust is flying everywhere. You can't see it. Most of you don't have glasses. We'll give you all safety glasses to wear. For the most part, just be cautious of what you're doing. Listen to the guys that are touring with you. Feel free to ask them questions, interject, see what's going on. Do everything you can to really learn what's going on out there, but keep your wits about you. Don't stray from the group. We'll stop by the restroom, too, on the way out if anybody wants to hit that before we go out there, just so we don't lose anybody.
Brad's our engineer. RIT, Brad.
RIT, yes.
I'd like to ask you all to join me in thanking John for the time. I'm happy to Western New York after the media, and I'd like to thank you so much for your time.
Todd, do you want to introduce the guys?
Certainly. Tonight we're going to have it's going to be pretty good. We're going to have our night leadership team take us on the tour. This is Daryl and Tim. Actually, when Jim was talking about our first quality tech who was struggling to try to keep up, that guy, he is part of the investment in Six Sigma Green Valve.